Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hey everyone, Kevin Cruz here. Welcome to the LeadX Leadership Show. We are once again helping you to fulfill your full leadership potential, and we want you to be a great boss, the boss everyone is fighting to work for. Today in the show, you're going to hear from a giant in the world of entrepreneurship. We talk about his very critical views of business plans and business planning. And even if you're not an entrepreneur, you probably have to work up a plan for your business unit or your team. And as a serial entrepreneur myself, I will say that big plans are of little value. But I do believe that just the exercise of going through them is helpful. And practically speaking, if you want to raise money out there or really work with anyone, you'll need a plan. Just know that it's going to change all the time. So he and I kind of differ on this view. I do agree that the big book, the big detailed plan that's supposed to actually represent your future, that's all BS. But boiling down your plan to a one sheet or just knowing that it's going to need to change every 90 days is probably still a pretty important exercise to do. But before I talk to our guest about this, let me ask you a question. Would you like on-demand access to over 20 different webinars from best-selling authors? And I'm adding like 2 webinars a month to this library. How about gain deep self-awareness, which of course is the first step to great leadership, by taking an online Big 5 personality assessment? Would you like access to over 200 video micro lessons, many of which are taught by yours truly? Well, check it all out. Visit leadx.org. And get the free trial, no cost, 3 days to check it out, and keep it if you like it, and just cancel it if you don't. No harm, no foul. And if you have 10 or more managers, send me an email at info@leadx.org, because I want to chat with you about doing a free pilot with your managers, where we give them full access and a sample curriculum for a few weeks, and then we survey them, and we both see the results. If they don't say it's amazing, if they don't say they've grown in a lot of ways, then we don't want you to have it, you don't want it, and we go and part as friends. But when your managers tell you it's the best training they've ever had, well then, we'll keep talking. Before our guest comes on, here's our quote of the week. Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. Of course, a famous quote by Mike Tyson. Our guest today is a professor at Syracuse University and former president of the Ewing Marion Kauffman Foundation. He served in major corporate roles, and he was a member of the president's National Advisory Council on Innovation and Entrepreneurship. His new book is Burn the Business Plan, What Great Entrepreneurs Really Do. Our guest is Carl Schramm. Welcome to the show, Carl.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure, and big fan of the book, which we're going to turn to in just a minute. But I always ask our guests the same first question, which is, what leadership advice would you give to a first-time manager?
I guess in a way, the first thing I'd say to people is, you know, when you start to be a manager, it means you're going to manage people. So suddenly you better be an adult. I think one of the things that managers screw up all the time is they sort of bring a me attitude towards management. And I don't want to get into the sort of constantly repeated stuff about, you know, giving managers and leading managers and, you know, all the stuff that people say. The reality is, having managed many big companies for 25 years as a chief executive, the people who succeed are people who sort of act like grownups. They can put their own problems to the side. They can empathize with other people. But they understand what's expected of other people, and they constantly work with the bigger organization and its goals in mind. Those are not easy things for people to absorb, because it seems to me, being a college professor in a lot of my life, we're not doing a great job of getting youngsters ready for adulthood. And I don't mean, you know, dating and parenting right, and all that stuff. I mean business adulthood.
I think with your experience in more recent years as a professor, you know, you've had a unique window into the newest generation that's now entering the workforce. And the millennials, which are a bit older now, but the other, you know, the newer generation too, they kind of have a bad rap as being different than those that went before them. Maybe not as strong a work ethic, maybe wanting to get promoted quickly. Do you get a sense that the younger people today are any different than they were 10, 20 or 30 years ago?
Hard to say. If there's one thing that troubles me, it's that students today all see what their mission in life is doing good. And I think in many ways, that's kind of like a veiled critique of capitalism, right? They all want to do a job. And I talk to a lot of employers, and this drives employers insane. You know, you're building cars, let's say at General Motors.
Right.
And in the interview, kids say, well, I want to be here to, you know, make transportation different and good for the planet,
right,
blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I always remind people that, you know, Henry Ford's great line was, if I asked people what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse.
Right,
right.
Right.
And, you know, civilization moves because entrepreneurs do radically different things. We call it disruptive, right? And with it come externalities. And some of them aren't wholesome, that's for sure. But on the other hand, it is capitalism that corrects these externalities. And I like to remind people, for example, that, you know, since 1972, we've made every single unit of GDP year after year with less carbon emissions and less carbon burn. Mm. I mean, that's an amazing tribute to engineering, which is totally lost, you know?
That's right.
And it's companies that did that. It wasn't the government.
Yeah, that's a great reminder. Now, Carl, your new book is Burn the Business Plan, What Great Entrepreneurs Really Do. So let's just start with, what's the big idea of your book?
Yeah, well, here's the British edition. And it's now out in Chinese, and it'll soon be out in Italian. So it's doing well all over the world. I think the big idea, and one of the reasons it's doing well, is it basically says, you know, there's a lot of myth around this question of entrepreneuring. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the most dangerous myths is that the people who can do company starts are like 21, 23, 19. That's the prime age for starting a business. And my book is all built on empirics. You know, I was president of the Kauffman Foundation for 10 years. We built a real research unit, economists for the most part, not business professors doing case studies. And what we found was, of course, radically different observations about who the entrepreneurial population is. And I think they're very useful for people to think about. So I guess in a sense, one of the biggest ideas in the book is that the average entrepreneur is 39 years old when he or she starts a business. The second one, which I think is probably even more important, and it goes, you know, you can't have one without the other. The average entrepreneur has worked in business for 15 years before they started a business.
Right.
Now, that is such a radical break with, you know, the stuff that's pumped out in the business literature. It's the stuff of academic business literature, and I made this point before. The reason is that business professors who study this, entrepreneurship professors, they study cases. And, you know, we have a confirmation bias. If you're a professor like I am, you can tell I'm an older person, right? A lot of people, it's kind of creepy in a way, but people think, oh, I want to hang around with young people. Well, that becomes a confirmation bias.
Right.
You tell us stories of youngsters or somebody who might be 35, you know, who started their business when they were 21. So it becomes a narrative of youth. It was after I wrote the book that I actually looked at my own career and said, holy smokes, I started my first business. I was 38, uh-huh, just like the book says.
Yeah, that I thought was an interesting, just fascinating data point that, again, you wouldn't know that from what's in the popular press. Everybody
yeah.
likes to celebrate the 24-year-old supposedly started in their garage and they've sold their app for $1 billion a year later, right? That gets headlines.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what we're all talking about over drinks at night or coffee or whatever.
Sure.
And I think this is great news. Because maybe I'm showing my bias as a 50-year-old, but like I think if you believe that pop wisdom, all of a sudden you find yourself 30 years old or 40 years old or God forbid 50 years old and thinking I'm too old or I'll never
yes.
get the support or never get the backing. So I think this myth busting goes a long way. I think that's great. And so you're
you know, related to that
yeah.
is success goes up with age. So actually, people who start businesses in their 40s and people in their 50s, 50-year-olds have higher success rates than 40-year-olds.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. My own cases were the companies I started in my 20s crashed and burned. Mm-hmm. The best exit was the one I started at age 35 and I sold at age 40 and took 10 years off. And I started a new one when I turned age 50. So I'm glad to hear there's still hope. Yeah. It gets brighter. The fifth decade. So your book is titled Burn the Business Plan. But what are your thoughts? Should we burn the more modern variations of the business plan, like the one-page lean canvas and things like that also?
Well, that's a very interesting question. Actually, right now I have a piece in the Harvard Business Review, and I actually embarrassingly forget what the title is. but it's something about the plan isn't everything. And it basically attends to this question, you know, why is planning useful? And it's hard to say, you know, we all plan. If tomorrow you say, yeah, I'm going on a picnic, you go to the grocery store today and buy hot dogs. We all plan, you know. Right. You're going to have kids, you buy a bigger house, you buy a station wagon, you give up your sports car. It's all, we do planning. It's endemic. On the other hand, this ritual of business planning, you know, I think that Eric Ries's book and the Canvas book, they are critiques of business planning, but they get it wrong. What they basically say is the plan is ridiculous. They know that because they didn't write plans themselves. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the founders of Apple and Facebook and Microsoft, you know, and Google and Uber, no business plans. Right. Yeah. So why are we doing this? Right. So I think in a sense, they're useful. We're going to do it anyway. But anyone could invent the canvas. Okay. Anyone could do kind of a lean startup. I started five businesses. At the moment, I'm invested in at least a dozen businesses. I've never read a business plan for any one of them, and I never wrote a business plan. Does it mean that I don't think there's a course charted out for every one of the companies I started? Or I would invest in a company where I couldn't basically see some vague way that they're going to be successful, not to get to an exit. Right. How are they going to be successful? The exit will happen. That's natural. And that's one of the biggest critiques I have of business planning is, you know, Procter & Gamble, the guys who started that, or General Motors, you know, or Wells Fargo, these guys started businesses that they would pass on to future generations. Right. If you'd have said, you know, to Mr. Procter and Mr. Gamble, you know, in 1855 or 45 when they started a business, how are you getting out of this? They'd say, what are you talking about? We started this because it's the creative platform for our lives. We know how to make soap. We know how to make candles. We're helping people in the market. What could be better? And by the way, we're getting wealthy.
That's right. And I want to come back to that point about the company as your life in just a second. But I'm curious, you know, for my own selfish purposes, I want to, you know, stick with the planning. Do you feel that you talk about being invested in a dozen businesses? Is today's pitch deck that entrepreneurs bring to potential investors, is that replacing the business plan, or you don't really even want to see a pitch deck that much?
No, I've been a venture investor too in formal funds. And there was this phrase, most of the phrases don't make any sense to me, but there is one phrase, okay? And it is, you know, you bet on jockeys, you don't bet on horses.
Love that phrase. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's sort of right. I mean, you have to know that somebody, you know, somebody comes to you tomorrow and says, guess what? I'm going to invent a telephone. You sort of say, well, I think Alexander Graham Bell did that. That horse has left the stable. Actually, that horse is dead.
Right, right.
We've been in wireless for a long time. But it's the person and what they know. You have to assess whether or not they're a charlatan. Okay. You know, in the last year or two, I've had probably three people come to me with battery technology stuff, you know, organic stuff that'll make electricity and so forth. You know, and I look at them and I'm sort of saying, well, you're not an engineer, you're not a material scientist, you may be a biologist, but there's a missing part of this. I'll pass. Mm-hmm. Right? And you do pass on really good things because somehow it doesn't add up to you, but it adds up to somebody else, which is great.
Yeah.
I'm glad for them. Okay. So, you know, there's always this constant assessment, and it's not like I've made every investment has been great. Okay. I haven't had a collapse yet, okay, but I got a lot of zombies. not a lot, but I probably suspect my ratio is pretty much like Kleiner Perkins, okay?
Right.
You know, For every seven, I got four that I'm not sure they're getting out of it, right? They're not going to die.
Right.
But, you know, if I get my money back dollar for dollar, it'll be okay. Or two for one, right? And I think that's probably not a bad record because a lot of people, you know, invest and it's totally lost.
Right, right. And to go back to your original point of anybody can create a lean canvas. Anybody can create the business plan. And you give the data, the hard data in your book, and you tell sort of a funny story about, I think it was a graduate student in one of your lectures who had won a contest.
True.
And he was laughing that he knew how to game the system to win the competition, and he had no intention of doing the business.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He was a master's degree in business. And I was talking about irreverently my view about business plans, he began to chuckle, right? And he was a huge African-American kid in the front row. And I said, you know, well, what are you laughing about? He said, I think you're entirely right. He said, I happen to be a champion business plan writer, but I'm never going to start a business. Right? So, I mean, he had the whole thing gamed out. He understood it perfectly. And, you know, I give some statistics in the book. If you go to the Rice Business Plan Competition and you look after the fact, now remember, I was trained as an economist, okay? Yeah. I got a PhD. I sort of like data. Economists do, right? I don't think business professors do, just offer a gratuitous slander, okay? We like to look at the data. And I've gone back and looked at the Rice Business Plan winners, right? And for every 10 winners, were someplace between 2 and 3 who actually start the business, right? So what's going on? Well, if you look at the resumes of some of these people, like PhD, MD, both degrees, right? You know, it's broadly announced on their resume that they won the Rice Business Plan Competition, right? So, you know, it's a resume enhancer,
right?
But it's got nothing to do with really starting a business. You know, in a way, they fool the judges.
Yeah.
And more power to them, because these business plan competitions, you know, I've judged too many. You know? And just to tell another story, I don't do it anymore. And the last time I did it, I thought, holy smokes, and you'll laugh at this. You know, I have seen three different universities in the same year, three winners. They were winners, you know, and what they had done is put an app to an electric frying pan and they made your telephone tell you when the egg was done.
Oh, geez.
Right. And as I say in the book, you know, we've been frying eggs for all of human history. It's never been this complicated. But the professors, you know, the last time I was in business, when I just stopped because it was just disturbing my equanimitas. I used to teach at Johns Hopkins. That's a phrase in Johns Hopkins medicine, your equanimitas. You know, I found myself this close to standing up in a huge room of people saying, do you mean to tell me your professor said this was a good idea? Right? The professor was in the audience and I didn't want to make a scene, but I said, that's it. I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to wrap up by asking you about your final chapter of the book that I feel really offers the most wisdom. And you say, be realistic about time and build your company as your life. So tell me about those things.
Well, you know, part of the problem with business planning is that you get a calendar put in front of you, you know. The formal business plan actually has a calendar, okay? So you need this much money, you'll hit these milestones. Milestones seem to be the total vocabulary. It's a management vocabulary. And we'll be out in 5 years at a 15 return on your investors' money, right? These calendars can never obtain. They can't work in business. Anybody who's run business knows that, a big business or a small business. So that's the first thing. You have to be realistic about time. You don't know. You know, you're jumping off and you don't know where this journey is going. And I think that's one of the most difficult things with business plans is it actually puts blinders on, particularly if you've got investors who you've promised to pursue this line. And I tell the story of Michael Levin in the book, who had to buy his investors out because he would have crashed and burned if he stuck on the business plan. And then suddenly he realized, but they didn't. He had a software business, not a steel business, which was, a huge revelation. Regarding the next part, which I think is in a way the most important part, and it's coincident to what I just said about time. This becomes your life, okay, and your identity. You know, I said to you a few minutes ago, you know, Part of my life is I'm a professor. I just said what my identity is. Mm-hmm. Part of my life is I'm an investor. Part of my life is I'm an author. What you do becomes your identity. And the notion that you're going to do this sort of walled off from your family mm-hmm. and your hobby and if you're going to have a successful business, this is going to become you.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky, as I tell the story of like Howard Head and James Dyson, these become fantastic platforms for creativity. You know, you started a business.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
When I was in the middle of business, part of the thrill of it was I didn't know if it was going to survive, right? But I knew before I came home that day, I was going to know more stuff. I was going to know more people. I was going to see if I was lucky, a really important combination. I come home smarter. And, you know, in my case, I left Johns Hopkins where I was teaching, and I taught there, you know, for 15 years, and I couldn't stay there and run a business. And I came to this wonderful moment where I said, hey, you know, I've been a professor for 15 years. Maybe I'll try this, okay? And thank God I did, because that led to one thing and led to another. And when I look back, I've had a hugely more interesting life than if I just stayed a professor for 50 years or 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah. That part of your book really spoke to me, because often when I'll take these like strengths discovery assessments or profiles and things over many years, one of the things that will come up is some form of you are creative. You will be a creative person. You will be an artist. You'll be something. I always thought, like, I never took an art class in my life. I like to go to a museum now and then. But like, what is this creative stuff? And it was only later in life that I started to view entrepreneurship as an art form almost. I mean, it sounds funny to say it that way, but I realized, at least for myself, an N of one, part of the passion is creating something from nothing. You know, yesterday it didn't exist. Oh. Today it exists. And the world's a little bit different. And so when you wrote about, you know, people saying it's art and business, you know, which is more creative, and they were having a hard time weighing them, that was really interesting to me.
Not for me. You know, you'll laugh at this. Every time I did one of those personality inventories, what you're supposed to do with your life, I took them three times in my life. Like, I was in high school and college. I was supposed to be an architect, right? And I look back and I think, you know, maybe I wasn't so wrong, except I didn't build buildings. And buildings are the same thing. I know a professor of religion down at the University of Miami who I was just speculating over a drink. He said, you know, think about entrepreneurs, right? They make something out of nothing. What's the definition of God, right?
Yeah.
You know, you make something out of an idea.
Yeah.
And I think that's often lost. And part of how it gets lost is in this silly stuff of trying to make it formalistic with planning.
Yeah, that's right. And making it about the exit or about the dollar.
Precisely. As opposed to the creative journey you're going to be on. And, you know, wouldn't it be different if people said, you know, as an entrepreneur, the first thing you got to keep in your mind is you're creating a creative platform. Steve Blank has this right in a way. You know, he basically says a new business is something like a platform on which to find a scale opportunity, right? And that's sort of right. It's sort of wrong. But it's more right than wrong.
Yeah, you know, yeah, absolutely.
You get into it, and then your job is to search for something to become successful. And how many times, you know, my first business, I was going to help hospitals. And when I sold the company, the business I had started actually became, you know, the algorithms to judge municipal bonds.
Wow.
when I look back at that and I say, either I was profoundly stupid, you know, and didn't see what I was doing, or the journey was such that it was revelatory, or I had to run so fast that when the company, you know, I did what a pivot was,
right?
And wasn't making tons of money, I found a new customer.
Yeah.
And a completely different identity for the company. And how did a professor of health policy become an insurance president? That's how it happened, right?
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Follow the thread wherever it goes.
Precisely.
Burn the Business Plan from Dr. Carl Schramm. Carl, thanks for coming on to the LeadX show. How can our listeners find out more about the book and your work?
Well, they can go to Amazon and buy it. Make sure you ask for the American edition. they do ship the English edition to America. It's the same words, so it doesn't make any difference.
A few spelling variations, but we can get it.
Yeah, that's right. They don't know how to spell color in England. Anyway, So, and you can go to my website, which is carlschram.com, CARLSCHRAM.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Carl Schramm. So that's how to get me.
Perfect. We're going to put...
Short of giving you my telephone number, that's how you get me.
Until then, we'll put all those links in the show notes and in the articles. Thank you so much for the time and for coming on to the LeadX show.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Hey, before I go, I have to ask a favor. If you liked this episode of the LeadX Leadership Podcast, please take 1 minute and leave a rating on iTunes. Don't know how? Just open your web browser, type in leadx.org/subscribe, and it will bounce you over to iTunes. Just click on ratings and click some stars. Leave a comment if you really want to get crazy with it. And when you're done, let us know by sending an email to info@leadx.org. And we will send you back a special link that will let you in to our private VIP group on Facebook. Just in the last month, we sent out 2 or 3 dozen different books from our guests. We gave everyone free and early access to our new online personality assessment. And our VIPs even got to ask IBM Watson their management and leadership questions. I hope you have a great week, and I hope you will also remember that leadership is influence, which means you are always leading. This week, lead with intent.